When Preacher emerged from the alley next to the fancy saloon and started along the boardwalk toward the entrance, he saw Beaumont standing there talking to a man with a badge pinned to his coat. That would be the local constable, who'd likely been summoned because of the shooting.
There's the man now!
The constable turned toward Preacher and reached for the pistol at his waist.
No, not the one who shot at me. The one who saved my life. Are you all right?
Whew! Yeah, I'm just sorry I couldn't catch up to the varmint. But how about you, mister? That damn bushwhacker missed you, didn't he?
Yes, thanks to you. I mean that. Thank you. How did you know someone was about to take a shot at me?
Oh, I was just walking along and saw a rifle barrel poke around the corner at you. Figured nobody does something like that unless they intend to shoot.
So you risked your own life to push me out of the line of fire?
Oh, now don't make me out to be some sort of hero. Tell you the truth, I didn't really think all that much about what I was doing. I just saw the gun and jumped.
And I'm glad you did. But then you gave chase to the man. Why did you do that?
Because I don't like a damn bushwhacker. You know, back where I come from, folks get into feuds now and then. I've had kin shot down from ambush, and I can't stomach it. I say you got something against the fella. It's better to come at him head on.
What happened when you ran into the alley? I heard another shot.
Yeah, I reckon he had time to reload. He took a shot at me, but he rushed it. When he missed, he lit a shuck. He was so damn nimble, I never even got a good look at him. You got any idea who'd want to bushwhack you like that, mister?
Well, I'm a successful man, and no man becomes successful without making enemies along the way. I've made my share. Maybe more than my share. But there aren't many who'd have the guts to come after me like that. Most of them know better.
Sounds to me like you need somebody watching your back trail.
That might not be a bad idea. I'm Shad Beaumont, by the way.
Oh, I'm Jim Donnelly.
Under the circumstances, I'm very pleased to meet you, Jim. Come inside and have a drink with me.
Oh, I don't know. I went in there last night and had a beer, and the bartender told me it ain't really my sort of place.
Well, that was before you were my friend. Come on, I'll see to it that you're treated right.
Well, in that case, I'm much obliged.
Oh, not as much as I am.
The same bald-headed bartender was behind the bar again tonight. His eyes widened in surprise as he saw Preacher coming in with Beaumont. He hurried forward with an eager-to-please smile on his face.
I heard that there was some trouble outside, Mr. Beaumont. You have my most sincere apologies.
There was nothing to do with you, Wallace. Send a bottle of brandy back to my usual table.
Of course, sir.
Beaumont looked over at Preacher.
Or if brandy isn't to your taste, my friend, you can have anything you like.
Well, now, I don't really know. I don't reckon I've ever had any brandy. Just beer and corn squeezins.
Well, then, you're in for a treat. Come along.
Beaumont led Preacher to the big table in the back of the saloon where they could see the whole room before him. The bartender quickly brought over the brandy and a pair of snifters, then he hurried away. Beaumont poured the brandy and handed one of the snifters to Preacher.
Once again, thank you for saving my life.
Well, now, I was glad I was able to lend a hand.
Whoa, God!
Try sipping it next time. I imagine it's a bit more potent than what you're accustomed to.
I don't know. I've had some corn whiskey that had peeled paint right off of a wall. This is mighty fine stuff, though.
Oh, only the finest for me, and all things. That's how I live my life. You know, Jim, your name is familiar to me for some reason. How long have you been in St. Louis? We haven't met before, have we?
I just got into town yesterday. Like I said, I was in here last night. If you were here, maybe you saw me then.
I was here all right, but that wouldn't explain why I've heard your name. And I'm sure I have. I have it now. You got into some trouble yesterday afternoon at a house on the north side of town, didn't you?
Now, how the hell did you hear about that?
Oh, I hear about everything important that goes on in St. Louis. I have friends and business associates all over town.
Well, what is your business if I ain't poking my nose into where it ain't wanted?
Whatever makes me a profit. And nearly every enterprise I undertake does make a profit, if I do say so myself.
Well, you must be a mighty smart man, then.
Well, I like to think so. What were you doing at Jesse's place?
Oh, well, I heard it was the best whorehouse in town. See, it's been a really long, lonely trip from Pennsylvania.
That's where you're from?
Yeah, well, my family's had a farm there for a long time. but I ain't cut out for farming, though. So I left to come west. Figured I'd make my fortune out here.
And how are you doing on that?
Well, not too good so far. I spent the day shoveling shit out of livery stable stalls in return for something to eat and a place to sleep.
Well, your luck has changed this evening.
Well, now, if you're about to give me a reward or something like that, then no offense, Mr. Beaumont, but you can keep it. I was raised not to ever take charity. And even if I don't pay much attention to what my folks taught me, that's one thing I stand by.
A reward isn't charity, Jim. It's something you've earned.
Beaumont brought out a purse and took a $5 gold piece from it. Preacher let his eyes widen at the sight of the coin, as if he couldn't help it. Beaumont put the coin on the table, but he didn't take his finger off of it.
Tell me about what happened to Jesse's.
Well, I reckon that was just one more case of me pushing in where my kind ain't wanted. The big black man who come to the door took me for some sort of delivery fellow and tried to run me off, and we got in a little squabble.
The way I heard it, you knocked Brutus senseless.
Oh, you know him, huh?
Like I told you, I know people all over town, and they know me.
Isn't that there Miss Jessie the friend of yours?
She is.
Huh. I sure was sorry for the trouble I caused her. She struck me as a mighty fine lady.
She is.
Yeah, but I wasn't going to let that fella Brutus push me around, neither. When the good Lord made me, he did not put much backup in me. That's just the way it is.
I understand. I'm the same way myself. And it's quite impressive that you were able to handle Brutus like that. He's practically broken men in half on a number of occasions, whenever there was trouble at the house.
Well, now, I didn't exactly fight fair. After I walloped him in the belly and the jaw and he didn't even blink, I figured I'd best kick him in the balls as fast as I could.
By God, Jim, I like the way you think.
Beaumont pushed the coin across the table to Preacher.
Here.
Now, I told you.
It's not a reward. It's an advance on your wages.
Wages?
That's right. You said I needed a man to keep an eye on my back trail, didn't you?
Well, yeah.
I have a feeling you're the man for the job. Unless, of course, you'd rather go back to mucking out that stable.
Well, I reckon you just hired yourself a new hand, boss.
Well, they polished off that whole bottle of brandy before they left Dupree's. Preacher got a little drunker than he'd intended to be, but he was still thinking clearly enough. The plan had worked perfectly. He had established himself as a tough man who needed a job, and then he'd provided an excuse for Beaumont to give him one. He was on the inside now, in a position where he could do the most damage. Preacher and Beaumont emerged onto the boardwalk.
Since you decided not to take me up on my offer to have Margaret spend some time with you, Jim, why don't we go to Jesse's? I'm sure you can find something to your liking there.
Oh, hell, I don't know. That fellow Brutus might not take kindly to it if I was to show up again.
Brutus will take kindly to what he's told to take kindly to. Now, everyone there needs to get used to seeing you around, since I visit the place frequently myself, and you're going to be with me in the future.
Well, all right. That sounds good. I'm obliged to you.
The driver had gotten down from the seat to open the carriage door, but Beaumont paused before climbing into the vehicle.
We're going to have to get you some better clothes, something more suited to your position. And we're definitely going to have to get rid of that hat.
Well, that's fine by me, boss. I never did like it.
Beaumont nodded toward the driver's seat.
Climb up there with Lorenzo. You can get acquainted with him on the drive over to Jesse's.
Preacher nodded. He wasn't surprised by the order. Beaumont had sat and drank with him in the saloon, but that was when he was still thanking Preacher for saving his life. Now the preacher was working for him, was in effect one of Beaumont's servants. There had been a subtle shift in the man's attitude. There would always be a certain divide between them now. Preacher swung up onto the driver's seat while Beaumont got into the carriage. Lorenzo closed the door and climbed up beside Preacher.
So, you're Lorenzo. I'm Jim Donnelly. I'm gonna be working for the boss, too. Oh, or are you a slave?
I'm a freed man. Mr. Beaumont, he don't keep no slaves. Say it ain't fitting. You ask me, he knows that you can own a man just as good with wages as you can with a whip.
The air was sticky this close to the river, but at least it was a little cooler than it had been earlier in the day. The ride up to Jesse's place helped to clear Preacher's head. He was still a little fuzzy from the brandy when the carriage rolled up to the house, but he felt better than when they'd left Dupree's.
I'll get the door.
The hell you will! I don't know what your job is, boy, but anything to do with this here carriage is my responsibility. Now you just get out of my way.
Well, fine with me.
Preacher jumped down from the box and stepped back to give Lorenzo room. Beaumont climbed down from the carriage and motioned for Preacher to follow him.
You never made it inside yesterday, did you?
No, front door was as far as it got.
Well, then you're in for a treat, Jim. This is the finest sporting house west of Chicago.
A big man stepped out, and in the light from inside, Preacher recognized him as Brutus.
Mr. Beaumont, it's good to see you as always, sir. And this is... you again.
Yes, I believe you and Jim here have met. Jim works for me now, Brutus, so you'll be seeing a lot of him.
Is that so? Well, that's just fine. You know Mr. Beaumont, and any fella you say is all right is always welcome here.
That goes without saying. Is the parlor empty?
No, sir. There are several gentlemen in there right now making up their minds.
Then empty it. Empty it of customers, anyway. The girls stay. And tell Miss Jessie that I'm here.
Yes, sir, right away. If you and this gentleman want to wait in the sitting room, I'll be right back when they're ready for you in the parlor.
That's fine.
Brutus ushered him into a small room furnished with a divan and two comfortable armchairs. There was an unlit stone fireplace on one wall. Everything in the room, even the smallest item, looked like it would cost more than Preacher made in a year of fur trapping. Beaumont motioned for Preacher to have a seat, then indicated a tasseled bell pull on the wall.
You want me to have someone bring us something to drink?
Oh, no, not on my account. I'm still a mite dizzy from all that brandy.
I understand. With the treat you have awaiting you, you don't want your faculties to be impaired. You want to enjoy this experience to the fullest.
Yeah, I reckon.
Whatever you like in a woman, Jim, you'll find it here. Jessie has more than a dozen girls working for her, and every one of them is a true beauty. Redheads, blondes, black wenches. I believe there's even an Indian squaw if you're looking for something more exotic. I don't think any of them are younger than 15, but if you'd like something of a more tender age, say 12, I'm sure that can be arranged by the next time we visit.
Oh, no. I reckon just a regular gal will do just fine for me, Mr. Beaumont.
Suit yourself.
You go with the gals who work here, too?
Me? Oh, I told you, Jim. Only the finest things in life for me. And the finest thing in this house is Miss Jessie herself.
The parlor's ready for you, sir.
Thank you, Brutus. After you, my friend. After what you did, you're the man of the evening, after all.
Preacher followed Brutus down a hallway with an expensive rug on the floor. Paintings of nude women and various scenes of debauchery hung on the corridor's walls. Brutus opened a pair of double doors and stood aside to let Preacher enter the parlor first. Again, Preacher felt a twinge of unease. But there was nothing dangerous waiting for him in the elegantly furnished parlor. Not unless you counted more than half a dozen nearly naked women as dangerous.
What did I tell you, Jim? Now, this is only a sampling of the delights available to you here.
The women were all good-looking, all right. There was no doubt about that. Thankfully, all of them were grown, too. Preacher figured the youngest one was 19 or 20. The others were all within a year or two of that age. One had auburn hair flowing around her shoulders, two were blondes, and the others had varying shades of brown hair, from a light chestnut to a deep mahogany. Some were tall, some were short. All of them were well-shaped, although there was variation in that, too, from slender and lissome to plush and rounded. Each and every one of them wore a practiced smile of welcome that hinted at all sorts of carnal delights to come.
What do you think? See anything that appeals to you? Nothing like this back on the farm, is there?
Hooey! I appreciate this, boss.
Well, go ahead. Take your pick. Hell, take two or three of them if you want. I'm sure they won't mind.
No. I reckon one'll do.
Preacher ran his eyes over the women. three of them sat on a divan, and the others had arranged themselves around it. The gauzy shifts they wore revealed just about all the details of their bodies. Preacher would have enjoyed romping with any of them, but his gaze was drawn back to one of the blondes. She was giving him the same sultry smile as all the others, but he thought he detected a trace of impishness in the expression. Her face was rounded and pretty. She had a scattering of freckles across her nose and a little dimple in her chin, which was just a little too prominent for her to be called classically beautiful.
I'd admire to make the acquaintance of that lady right there.
The woman stood up from where she'd been sitting on the divan and came toward Preacher.
Ah, you picked out little Cassandra. An excellent choice, Jim.
Hello. Jim, is it?
Oh, yes, Jim Donnelly. I am mighty pleased to meet you.
You will be. Come with me.
Cassandra started to lead him out of the parlor, but before they could leave the room, Jesse came through the door. She looked every bit as lovely as she had the day before, and the sight of her made Preacher's heart slug a little harder for a second.
So it really is you. When Brutus told me, I wasn't sure whether to believe him. And you work for Shad now.
Yes, ma'am.
And then you're welcome here. Just behave yourself. No more brawling.
No, ma'am.
Enjoy yourself, then. Cassandra, make sure Mr. Donnelly is well treated.
Oh, don't you worry, Jesse. I intend to.
With a swish of skirts and a whiff of some delicate perfume, Jesse moved past them.
Hello, Shad.
The way you're squeezing my hand, Jim, you must be really eager to get upstairs.
Yes, ma'am.
Cassandra turned to Preacher and leaned closer so that her breast pressed warmly against his arm.
By the time this night is over, you won't be calling me ma'am.
Well, that gal was right about that. Sometime during the next couple of hours, and Preacher was a mite vague about when it was exactly, she told him to call her Casey, so that's what he did from then on. Now, he was lying there in her bed, holding her as she dozed with her head on his shoulder.
Donald, Mr. Beaumont says for you to get your ass out of that horse bed and get downstairs. He's ready to leave.
Preacher threw back the sheet and started to get out of bed.
Oh, don't go, Jim. You're so sweet. And it feels so good just lying here.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. When the boss says it's time to go, I reckon it's time to go.
I know. It's just that I... Well, Jim, you're not really...
You ain't about to say I ain't like all the other men, are you?
Of course not. Good night, Jim.
Oh, shit. Now, Casey, I didn't mean to...
You better go. You don't want to keep Mr. Beaumont waiting.
Preacher stood up and started pulling on his clothes.
Look, I had a mighty fine time.
I'm glad.
I'll be seeing you.
Brutus bared his teeth in a grimace.
You'll learn not to keep Mr. Beaumont waiting.
For what it's worth, Casey agrees with you.
Who?
Preacher looked over at Brutus and saw that the man wore a puzzled frown.
Casey. Cassandra.
Never heard her called Casey before. Round here she's always just been Cassandra.
Huh.
Preacher looked at the door again and thought about the young woman on the other side of it. Had she revealed something to him that she hadn't shared with anyone else here in St. Louis? If that was true, why would she do such a thing? Preacher didn't have the answers to those questions. Maybe he would learn them in time, he told himself as he followed Brutus downstairs. The parlor was empty now except for Beaumont.
It's about time, Donnelly. Let's go.
Good night, Shad.
Preacher turned to look up at Jesse, who stood at the top of the stairs. She wore a long, flimsy gown and robe, and with the light from the landing behind her, the lines of her body were clearly revealed. Her hair was loose and appealingly disheveled. Preacher wasn't sure if he had ever seen a lovelier woman in his entire life.
Good night, my dear.
Did you have a pleasant time with Cassandra, Mr. Donnelly?
Oh, yes, ma'am, I sure did. She is a right nice girl.
I'm glad. You have a pleasant evening, too. What's left of it?
Yes, ma'am.
Don't get used to Jessie paying so much attention to you. She was just being polite.
Yes, sir. I never doubted it.
Lorenzo already had the carriage door open. Preacher figured it was sometime after midnight, but that elderly driver did not seem tired in the least.
Heading home, Mr. Beaumont?
That's right. Home. And when we get there, Donnelly, Lorenzo can show you your quarters. I'll expect you in the main house at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, sir.
Once Beaumont was inside the carriage, Preacher and Lorenzo swung up onto the driver's box, and Lorenzo got the team moving.
I see you ain't Jim anymore. You just Donnelly now.
Well, boss can call me whatever he wants.
You ain't as special as you thought you was.
Well, trust me, I never thought I was special.
But in fact, he was pretty special, Preacher mused. Because he was the man who, sooner or later, was going to kill Shad Beaumont. Over the next week, Beaumont kept his promise and saw to it that Preacher got a new outfit. He sent Lorenzo with Preacher to one of the stores in downtown St. Louis that sold men's clothing, where Lorenzo picked out and paid for a couple of gray tweed suits, half a dozen shirts, two cravats, a pair of high-topped black boots, and a beaver hat. None of the garments were as fine and expensive as what Beaumont wore, of course, but they were probably the fanciest duds Preacher had ever had. He felt a little like a damn fool, too, when he saw himself in the store's looking glass.
You know what they say about the silk purse and the sow's ear? You still look like a big old farm boy to me. Even if you is dooted up some.
Don't tell the boss, but that's the way I feel, too.
Preacher liked the little carriage driver, despite Lorenzo's habitually gloomy disposition. He figured working for Shad Beaumont would make anybody feel that way. Although Jessie hadn't seemed unhappy, he reminded himself, and neither did the folks who worked at Dupree's. He supposed that was because Beaumont paid well. The two of them visited one place or the other every night. Sometimes they made it to both. Preacher didn't see Casey again, and when he asked Brutus about her, the big man said that she hadn't been feeling well. Preacher managed to avoid going with any of the other girls, and Beaumont didn't press the issue. While he was upstairs with Jessie, Preacher usually stayed in the kitchen and sometimes played cards with Brutus and Lorenzo. Brutus didn't seem to hate Preacher quite as much as he had at first. At least he tolerated the mountain man being around now. During the days, Beaumont rose late, had a leisurely breakfast, and then set out in the carriage from the big whitewashed house on the south side of town that reminded Preacher of plantation houses he'd seen down around New Orleans when he was a young man. As Beaumont's bodyguard, Preacher went with him, of course, while Beaumont made the rounds of his businesses in St. Louis, both the legitimate ones and the not-so-legitimate. They stopped at taverns and lower-class brothels and dusty warehouses where the merchandise stored in them was probably stolen. During that week, Preacher didn't get a chance to slip away and pay a visit to Uncle Dan's camp. He hoped the old-timer wasn't getting too worried about him. Then one evening, Beaumont stayed home and sent Lorenzo with the carriage to fetch Jessie back to his house instead of him going to her place.
I'm not leaving the house tonight, so you won't have to stay around, Donnelly.
Beaumont took a coin from his pocket and flipped it to Preacher.
You've been doing a good job. Not that you've really had anything to do. Why don't you go out and find a woman or a poker game and enjoy yourself?
Well, now, thank you, boss. I reckon I will do that.
You know, I put the word out that I wanted to know who took that shot at me the night you saved my life. People have been asking around on my behalf all over town. Because it's hard to keep a grudge quiet if it's bad enough to prompt an ambush. But no one seems to have any idea who could have done it. If you could turn up that information, Donnelly, there'd be a bonus in it for you. I don't like the idea that there's some mysterious stranger out there somewhere who wants me dead.
I'll see what I can find out, boss.
Preacher walked out to the stable and saddled horse, then rode toward the center of town, just in case Beaumont was watching. When he was out of sight of the house, he turned west and headed out of St. Louis toward Uncle Dan's camp. When he neared the grove of trees, he reined in.
Uncle Dad.
Come on in. Partner's been waiting for you.
Preacher rode into the trees and found the camp.
You're too damn fiddle-footed to stay in one place for a whole week, huh?
That ain't it at all. This campsite's just a mite better, that's all. Better firewood and a little closer to the creek that runs through those trees.
Sure.
I've been keeping the coffee warm for you every night. Figured you'd be showing up before now.
Yeah, well, Beaumont's been keeping me pretty busy. Still spooked from that bushwhack attempt, so I've had to stay close to him whenever he leaves the house.
Oh, must be a terrible chore having to visit saloons and whorehouses every single night.
Well, now, it ain't as entertaining as you might think it'd be.
The two men sat on logs and sipped coffee while Dog laid at Preacher's feet. Preacher reached down with his free hand and scratched between the big cur's ears.
And now that you're working for Beaumont, what do you figure on doing? Hey, want me to take another shot at him so he'll know he still got somebody gunning for him?
No. We got away with that once, but I don't want you running that risk again, Uncle Dan. I'm waiting for Beaumont to come up with some new scheme so I can ruin it for him.
How long you gonna keep that up?
I don't know. Depends on what happens, I reckon.
You know, you could kill the son of a bitch just about any time now and be halfway back to the mountains before anybody knowed what happened.
Yeah, Uncle Dan, but there's one problem with that. I ain't a murderer. When I kill Beaumont, it's gonna be head on, and he's gonna know why he's dying.
Well, I never did say to strangle the son of a bitch in his sleep now, did I? Tell him who you are. You can even give him a chance to get his paws on a gun if you want. I reckon you could still kill him.
It may come to that, but not yet.
This ain't like you, Preacher. I may not have knowed you all that long, but I heard plenty about you. You ain't the sort of a fella to pussyfoot around. What's all this sneaking and pretending to be somebody else going to accomplish?
I don't know. I'll think on it. I can tell you this, though. It ain't gonna go on too much longer.
I hope not. I'm getting anxious to see the mountains again.
Yeah, me too, old boy. Me too. All right. I best be getting back. I'll be seeing you.
As Preacher started out of the trees, he heard something that caught his attention. He stiffened in the saddle. That sound had not come from Uncle Dan's horse, which meant there was another animal somewhere close to the camp. And where there was a horse, there was usually a rider. This one could be a stray, but Preacher's gut told him that wasn't the case. He didn't react visibly to the sound, but kept horse moving at a steady pace instead. As he emerged from the trees, he turned the big stallion onto the trail that led back to St. Louis. He didn't look back. Every instinct in his body told him that someone was following him, though. The lights of the town glittered in the darkness ahead of him. They were bright enough, and there were enough of them so that a faint glow filled the sky over the settlement. Preacher didn't slow down when he reached the streets of the town. He rode on through St. Louis toward the riverfront. Preacher turned into a narrow lane and slipped out of the saddle as soon as he was around the corner. He gave horse's rump a soft slap and kept the stallion moving forward. Horse wouldn't go too far before he stopped and waited for Preacher to summon him back. It shouldn't take long for him to find out what he needed to know anyway. Sure enough, only a minute or so had gone by when another rider rounded the corner and started along the lane, following the sound of horse's hooves. By that time, Preacher had drawn back into the shadows that clogged the deep recessed doorway of an abandoned building. The man who rode past never even glanced in his direction. Even though the light in the lane was bad, Preacher's eyesight was keen enough to tell him that the man was familiar. And after a second, the Preacher recalled his name. The man following him was the gambler Cleve. Preacher had seen him both at Dupree's and Jesse's place. As far as Preacher knew, there was no connection between Cleve and Beaumont, except for the fact that the gambler patronized places owned by Beaumont. It seemed likely, though, that Cleve had picked up Preacher's trail at Beaumont's house. Was he a spy for Beaumont? Did Beaumont really suspect Preacher of some sort of treachery after all? Preacher went after Cleve. The man was riding slowly enough so the Preacher had no trouble keeping up with him on foot. He stayed back about 100 yards and haunted the shadows so that he could duck out of sight if Cleve happened to look back. After a few minutes, though, Cleve reined in and stood up in the stirrups to look around. He must have realized that he'd lost his quarry. Preacher had already spotted Horace standing in front of a darkened livery barn across the street, and he recognized it now as the barn where Horace had spent one night. The stallion must have recognized the place, too, and was waiting there for Preacher to come for him. Cleve hadn't noticed Horace when he rode past the livery, though. That much was obvious from the way the gambler yanked his own mount around and rode up the street, moving quicker now. Preacher waited until Cleve was almost out of sight. Preacher quickly rode after Cleve. The hunter had become the hunted now. Preacher knew that by staying well back, he ran the risk of losing Cleve, but he had confidence in his own ability to trail the gambler. The man seemed to be headed straight toward Jesse's place, and that turned out to be the case. Cleve rode around to the back of the house. Preacher went after Cleve on foot. He reached the rear corner of the house in time to see that Cleve had led his horse into a shed at the rear of the place and left the animal there. The gambler stood at the back door now, evidently having just knocked on it.
Did you find out what you went after?
I'll speak to Jesse about it.
She ain't back from Beaumont yet. She said for you to come in and wait.
All right, boy.
Preacher stood at the corner of the building, frowning in thought. Was Jesse the one who had sent Cleve to follow him? She had known that she was visiting Beaumont's house tonight instead of the other way around, so she could have figured that Beaumont might dismiss Preacher for the night. On the other hand, she could have simply been acting on Beaumont's orders and serving as an intermediary between him and Cleve, although Preacher couldn't really see why Beaumont would go to that much trouble. The best way to find out the truth was to wait until Jesse got back. So that's what Preacher settled down to do. About an hour later, he heard the clatter of carriage wheels in front of the house. Preacher ventured to the front corner of the house and watched as Lorenzo opened the door of Beaumont's fancy carriage and helped Jesse climb out.
Thank you, Lorenzo.
My pleasure, Miss Jesse.
Then Jesse came up the walk to the house. Preacher could see well enough to tell that she had a shawl draped around her shoulders. Brutus met her at the door.
Cleve's back. He's waiting for you in your office.
Thank you, Brutus.
Preacher turned and hurried along the whitewashed side of the house. Now, he had never been in Jesse's office, but he had been around the house enough in the past week to have figured out that it was in the rear of the house. Only one window back there had the glow of lamplight showing through it. And Preacher headed for it. The night was warm, and he hoped that the window would be open, at least a little.
Hello, Cleve.
Jesse, you're looking lovely as ever.
Just tell me what you found out. Were you able to follow Donnelly?
Why, yes. Your hunch was right. Beaumont told him he could leave the house tonight since you were coming over there.
Where'd he go? Some dive down by the river?
Hardly. I followed him to a spot about a mile west of town. He met someone there under some trees and talked to them for a while. I couldn't get close enough to see who it was or to hear what they were saying.
Then he is up to something. I knew it. But what?
I don't know. But I think we need to keep an eye on him. If he really had something to do with that shot at Beaumont, as you suspect, and he's planning something and wanted to get close to Beaumont for a reason.
We have to find out who Donnelly is and what he's after. We don't want him getting in the way when we make our own move against Chad.
I agree.
Where did he go when he got back to town? To Beaumont's house?
Well, I don't know, damn it. I hate to admit it, Jesse, but I lost him somewhere in town.
Lost him? He didn't know you were following him, did he?
Oh, well, I don't see how he could have. I was very careful.
We'll have to figure out some other way to find out what we need to know. Maybe Cassandra could get it out of him. He seemed to like her.
How's she doing?
She hasn't recovered from what Beaumont did to her, but she's getting better. Another week and she might be all right.
Preacher stiffened, and a cold finger ran along his spine. What the hell could Beaumont have done to Casey to make her keep out of sight for 2 weeks? He must have hurt her pretty bad to do that.
Don't you move, mister, or this old blunderbuss of mine will blow a hole in you.
Take it easy, Brutus. It's just me, Jim Donnelly.
Donnelly? What the hell are you doing skulking around out here? Damn it, man, I was just starting to trust you.
Before Preacher could answer, the window above his head was thrust up and Cleve leaned out with a gun in his hand.
Well, what's going on out here? Who's that standing there?
It's that fella Donnelly. I just caught him skulking around. Looked like he was eavesdropping on you and Miss Jessie.
Donnelly? By God, I was just...
Yeah, I know what you were doing. I heard you and Miss Jessie talking about it. You were following me because you don't trust me.
Evidently with good reason. Bring him into the house, Brutus. We have to find out how much he knows.
Brutus nudged the barrel of the blunderbuss, and Preacher realized he really didn't have a hell of a lot of choice in the matter. Once they were inside, they used a rear hallway to reach Jesse's office. Jesse and Cleve waited there, and both of them wore grim expressions when Preacher walked in ahead of Brutus. Cleve's pistol was still in his hand.
Close the door, Brutus.
You want me to stay, Miss Jesse?
No, I think we can handle Mr. Donnelly.
You sure?
Yes. Go tend to the house.
Yes'm. But you just holler if you need me. You best behave yourself, Donnelly.
Jesse nodded toward an armchair in front of the big desk that dominated the room.
Sit down. How much did you overhear?
Enough to know that the two of you are plotting against Shad Beaumont.
I say we go ahead and kill him. Brutus can get rid of the body so that no one will ever find it.
Well, if you do that, you're going to be losing an ally.
What are you talking about?
I reckon you must have some sort of grudge against Beaumont. Well, you ain't the only ones.
Are you saying that you're his enemy? Even though you work for him?
You know, an old Chinaman called Sun Tzu once said it was a good idea to keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Really? Well, now, how does a farmer hear about Sun Tzu?
Well, I reckon I must have heard it somewheres. Makes good sense, don't it?
What do you have against Beaumont?
No, I reckon that's my business.
How do we know that you're telling the truth? You could be lying just to save your skin.
Well, you ain't told me why you're pretending to be his friends while you're really working against him.
You're right. But I'll do better than tell you. I'll show you. Wait here. Cleve, you'll keep an eye on him?
Oh, be glad to. You know, I still say it will be simpler to kill you. I could tell her you tried to escape, and I had to shoot you.
You reckon she'd believe you?
I think so.
I would not advise trying it.
Jesse generally knows what she's doing. I'll string along with her. For now.
Preacher looked around and saw that Jesse was coming back into the room. She had somebody with her, and when she stepped inside, Preacher realized that the woman behind her was Casey. The blonde wore a robe, and she had her head down so the Preacher couldn't see her face, but he knew it was her.
You said you wanted to know what we had against Shad Beaumont. This is just one thing among many.
Jesse reached out, cupped a hand under Casey's chin, and gently lifted the blonde's head so the Preacher could look into her face. Now, Preacher had seen a lot of bad things in his life. He'd been in a war, and he'd seen men blown apart by cannon fire. He'd seen whole families, including the youngsters, killed and mutilated by Injuns. And what he was looking at now was nowhere near as bad as those things. But it was bad enough to make him come up out of his chair, his hands clenching angrily into fists as he surveyed the damage that had been done to Casey's face. Both eyes were blackened and still swollen, half closed. Her nose had been broken and reset, but it would probably never look like it had before. Bruises mottled her cheeks and her jaw. Her lips were puffy and had healing cuts on them. More bruises on her neck showed where a big hand had brutally strangled her.
Beaumont.
That's right. He held her down and nearly choked the life out of her while he beat her again and again with his other fist. He did this with his bare hands, Mr. Donnelly. And it's not the first time he's treated one of my girls this way.
Can I go back to my room now?
Of course, dear. I'm sorry I had to bring you in here. But Mr. Donnelly wanted to know why we feel the way we do about Shad Beaumont.
Casey looked at Preacher before she left. She seemed embarrassed that he had seen her this way. But at the same time, he thought he recognized a hint of a smile on her puffy lips, as if she were glad to see him again. He hoped things would work out so that they could spend some more time together one of these days.
What in God's name did she do to set Beaumont off like that?
Nothing. Nothing that she could remember, anyway. He just flies into these rages sometimes for no apparent reason. I think it's because he's so full of vile hatred and scorn for everybody in the world that from time to time he can't hold it in behind that smooth facade he puts up. He's an evil man, Mr. Donnelly. A truly evil man.
Yeah, I know. It's because of him that a bunch of innocent folks I know are dead.
I don't doubt it for an instant.
How about you, Cleve? What's your part in this?
You mean, what grudge do I bear against Beaumont? Well, none really. I just think that someone else will be better suited to run things around here.
In other words, you're just ambitious.
Oh, not that ambitious. I was speaking of Jessie. She's the one who should be in charge, not Beaumont. I'll be quite content just to help her achieve that goal.
You had something to do with that attempt on Shad's life, didn't you? It must have been a friend of yours who shot at him, so you could pretend to save him and get him in your debt.
Now that'd be a mighty tricky thing to do.
It was a smart thing to do. He trusts you now because of that. I began to wonder about it when neither Cleve nor I could find out anything about who it might have been that shot at him. Shad has plenty of enemies in St. Louis who'd like to see him dead, but if any of them had worked up the courage to actually try something like that, the word would have gotten around. That meant it almost had to be a stranger. And since you were a stranger in town as well...
Preacher shrugged. It was an admission that she was right.
And you're not a farmer from Pennsylvania, either. There's a sense of danger that seems to follow you around. I don't believe I've ever seen a man who's always so alert for trouble. You didn't learn that trudging along behind a plow.
Preacher still didn't say anything.
I can make a guess who you really are. There's a man that Beaumont's afraid of. So afraid that he's put a bounty on his head. A man from the Rocky Mountains who has ruined several of Shad's plans and killed dozens of his agents. I think you're that man, Mr. Donnelly.
You mean that this fella is...
That's right. I believe that this is the famous Preacher.
You know, there's another old saying about a cat being out of a bag. I don't believe a Chinaman said it, though.
So you admit that you're a Preacher?
Hell, I might as well.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. Well, I've heard a Preacher. He's just one of those ignorant, unwashed mountain men.
Just because a man doesn't have much education doesn't mean that he's unintelligent. I haven't been to school all that much myself, and I believe I'm fairly smart.
Yeah, but you're a...
Woman? Is that what you were about to say?
You know, I may be ignorant, but I know enough that when I'm neck deep in a hole, I stop digging.
Sorry, Jesse. I didn't mean anything. And of course, you're right. But the question is, what are we going to do about him now?
We'd be fools to pass up this opportunity to have him on our side. You know his reputation. You know there are good reasons why Shad fears him.
Look, if you folks want me to step out of the room, I reckon I could go out in the parlor. I bet I could find a gal out there willing to keep me company for a while.
I'm sure you could, but you don't need to leave, Preacher. I think we should all work together. We have a common enemy, after all.
You feel the same way, Gambler?
Of course. If Jesse does...
Cleve opened his coat and put away his pistol, slipping it into a holster somewhere under the garment.
We're agreed, then? We all work together?
Suits me. Just one question. What do you plan on doing next?
Jesse went back behind the desk and sat down, motioning for Preacher to resume his seat in front of the desk. Cleve remained on his feet, still watchful. His hand didn't stray far from the place where the pistol was tucked away under his coat.
How much do you know about Beaumont's business?
I know he really owns this place, and Dupree's, and a lot of other places in St. Louis.
Some of them are pretty shady, but some of them are real businesses.
That's right. Does he let you in on his plans?
Nope. He just tells me to come with him when he goes somewhere, and I go. That's it.
One of the businesses he owns is a cotton brokerage. A riverboat is supposed to dock tomorrow with a load of cotton from New Orleans that's bound for Shad's warehouse. It's not going to make it. River pirates are going to take it over, run it aground, and steal the cotton.
Oh, these here pirates, they'll be working for you?
Not at all. They work for Shad.
Now, wait a minute. He's going to steal his own cotton?
That's right. The cargo is insured, you see. Shad's men will deliver the cotton to one of his other warehouses here in St. Louis, so he'll still have the shipment and can dispose of it discreetly, but he'll collect the value of it from the insurance company, too.
Good God, that's mighty tricky. Most robbers I've ever heard about just stick a gun in somebody's face and tell them to stand and deliver.
It's Penny Annie's stuff. Beaumont operates on a bigger scale than that. At the rate he's going, he'll soon be one of the richest men in the entire country, and most of it will have come from ill-gotten gains.
So you plan to stop this riverboat hijacking?
That's right. Anything we can do to put a crimp in Shad's plans is really less than he actually deserves.
Well, what can I do to help?
You go with Beaumont every time he goes out?
That's right.
But on a night like this, where he stays home, he didn't have anything for you to do?
Nope.
If he was going to be at home tomorrow, maybe he would send you with the men who are supposed to rob the boat. I can arrange for him to be busy, and you could tell him that you want something else to do. Something bigger than just guarding him.
You reckon that'd work?
Shad admires ambition. As long as he doesn't think anyone who works for him is getting too ambitious. I think it's worth a try.
And if I do go with these so-called pirates, what then?
We're going to have men waiting for them. Having a man on the inside who could take them by surprise might make it easier to deal with them.
Huh. To bushwhack them, you mean?
Well, you can't very well claim you have some sort of moral dilemma when it comes to killing Beaumont's men. You've done plenty of that yourself.
Well, I reckon what you're saying might work, Miss Jessie.
I hoped you'd see it that way.
The fellows who work on the riverboat now, they don't know anything about this?
Not a thing. And it's very likely that some of them will be killed when Shad's men attack the boat. So if you help us ruin his plans, you may well be saving the lives of those boatmen.
All right, then. I'll go along with that plan. Beaumont may not, though.
I know. If he doesn't, we'll bide our time and wait for our next opportunity to make use of you. One thing we can't afford to do at this point is to make him suspicious of you. You're our secret weapon, Preacher.
Just don't misfire.
Uh-uh. Ain't likely.
Where are you going?
Well, we're done here, ain't we?
I suppose.
There is one more thing. I'd like to see, I'd like to see Casey Cassandra again before I go.
I'm not sure she'd like that.
Well, now, I don't want to upset her, but I got something I want to tell her.
All right. I suppose it would be all right. You can knock on her door anyway and find out if she'll see you. However, I don't know if she'll be up to...
No, it ain't about that. I just want to talk to her.
All right.
Oh, and you might tell Brutus that we're all friends again, in case he sees me wandering around the house and decides to use that old blunderbuss on me.
I'll be happy to take care of that.
They left the office together after Preacher, and Preacher made his way to Cassandra's room.
Who's there?
Jim Donnelly?
Oh, Jim, I don't think I feel up to seeing you right now, Jim.
I just want to talk to you for a minute.
Really?
It won't take long.
All right, but wait just a minute. You can come in now.
The room was dark, and when Preacher saw that, he knew that that was what had caused the delay. She had blown out the lamp so that he couldn't get a good look at her. He could barely see her standing on the far side of the room.
Casey, you don't have to worry about what you look like. Not with me. It ain't your fault what Beaumont done to you.
It wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been with him.
Well, now, you didn't have a whole heap of a choice about that, now, did you?
No, none at all.
So, like I said, It ain't your fault. It's that bastard Beaumont's fault. And I'm here to promise you, he's gonna pay.
But I don't understand. You work for Beaumont, don't you?
Well, now that's mighty complicated. All I can say is that things ain't always what they seem.
Are you going to kill him?
We'll have to wait and see about that.
If you do, Jim, I want you to know that I will be so great.
You don't have to say anything else, Casey. I just want you to know that justice is going to catch up to Beaumont sooner or later.
Jim, you don't have to go just yet, do you?
Preacher felt her lean against him, and as his arms instinctively went around her, he realized the last sound he'd heard had been her robe falling to the floor. Her nude body was soft and warm in his embrace.
You'll have to be gentle with my face, but as for the rest of it, you don't have to be gentle at all.
Preacher hadn't asked Jessie how she was going to keep Beaumont from making his usual rounds the next afternoon. He didn't want to know, but whatever she did, sending word to Beaumont that she wanted to come to his house again that afternoon, Preacher supposed, it must have worked, because shortly after Beaumont rose late in the morning and had a leisurely breakfast, he sent for Preacher.
I'm not going to need you until this evening, Donnelly.
Hey, boss, if I've done something that don't suit you, and that's why you don't need me around as much all of a sudden...
That's not it at all. I don't intend to go out this afternoon, and I'm not worried about anyone bothering me here in my own house. If you think I'm going to dock your wages for the time I don't need you at my side, you can ease your mind about that. I still intend to pay you the same.
Oh, yeah, no offense, boss, but I ain't sure I like being paid when I ain't doing anything to earn those wages. I mean, that ain't the way I was raised. You got anything else I can do to help out?
No, you can do whatever you... Wait a minute. You've done very well at your job, Jim. Would you be interested in perhaps trying something other than being my bodyguard?
Oh, I'll do whatever you say, boss, but I always figured to move up in the world.
I'll bet you did. I have some men doing a job for me this afternoon, and I can always use another good man to help out. Plus, it might not hurt to have someone else there to look out for my interests. There are a lot of men who are willing to work for me, but that doesn't mean I can fully trust all of them.
Well, you say the word, boss, and I'll be glad to take care of whatever chore it is you got for me.
Excellent. You go down to Red Mike's and find a man named Dugan. Tell him I said that you're to go along on the job this afternoon.
Red Mike's, Dugan.
Oh, and Jim, you'd better take a rifle with you, and an extra pistol as well.
Oh, sounds to me like there's going to be some excitement.
Well, let's put it this way. I don't think you're going to be bored.
Red Mike's was the kind of place where a man could get his throat cut and the only thing anybody would worry about would be not getting the blood on them. Preacher had been there before on previous trips and also with Beaumont. Until a year or so earlier, Preacher had never even heard of Shad Beaumont and he wouldn't have guessed that the man owned Red Mike's. Preacher had always assumed that the red-bearded giant who tended bar there and gave the place its name was the proprietor. Turned out that was not the case, however. Even at midday like this, the windowless place was gloomy inside, lit by several candles. The air was heavy with the mingled smells of smoke, unwashed flesh, stale beer, whiskey, piss, and puke. In other words, it smelled like civilization to Preacher. He went to the bar, which was nothing more than rough-hewn planks laid across whiskey barrels. Preacher nodded to the hulking, red-bearded figure on the other side of the boards.
Howdy, Mac. Dugan around?
Who's asking? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that new fellow who works for Mr. Beaumont.
Mike jerked a thumb toward a door at the back of the room.
Back yonder.
Obliged.
Instantly, the four men sitting at a rickety table passing around a bottle turned toward him and lifted pistols, cocking the weapons as they rose.
Ho, take it easy there, boys. I ain't looking for trouble.
What are you looking for?
The man who spoke was ugly and lantern-jawed, with black hair under a tattered coonskin cap.
I was told to ask for a fellow named Dugan.
And who told you that?
Well, now, I reckon if you're Dugan, you know the answer to that as well as I do.
Yeah, this is the fella the Beaumont told us to look for. Put your guns away. I'm Dugan.